Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 12, Chapter 6, Verse Number 68. Yad uha
vava
vibudar shaba savataradas tapadyanusavanam. Ahar, ahar,
ahar, ahar,
amnaya,
vidi,
vidino patistamananam, akila, drita, vijina, bija, vabarjana, Bhagavata Samabhidhimahi Tapana Mandalam. Translation. O glowing one, O powerful Lord of the Sun, you are the chief of all the demigods. I meditate with careful attention on your fiery globe, because for those who offer prayers to you three times daily according to the Vedic method passed on through authorized disciplic succession, you burn away all sinful activities, all consequent suffering, and even the original seed of desire. So then, there's no purport here. Next verse, I'll read the translation. You are personally present as the indwelling Lord in the hearts of all moving and non-moving beings who depend completely on your shelter. Indeed, you animate their material minds, senses, and vital airs to act. No purport again. Text 70. The world has been seized and swallowed by the python of darkness in its horrible mouth and has become unconscious as if dead. But mercifully glancing upon the sleeping people of the world, you raise them up with the gift of sight. Thus, you are most magnanimous. At the three sacred junctures of each day, you engage the pious in the path of ultimate good, inducing them to perform religious duties that situate them in their spiritual position. Purport. According to Vedic culture, the three higher classes of society, the intellectual, political, and mercantile sections, are formally connected with the spiritual master by initiation and receive the Gayatri Mantra. This purifying mantra is chanted three times daily at sunrise, noon, and sunset. Auspicious moments for the performance of spiritual duties are calculated according to the sun's path in the sky, and this systematic scheduling of spiritual duties is here attributed to the Son as the representative of God. So, the Sun God, the Sun is Surya, but the Sun God is known as Surya Narayan. So, as Sri Yajnavalkya says a few texts earlier, I offer my respectful obeisances to the Supreme Personality of Godhead appearing as the Son. So, the Son, of course, for everyone on this planet, the Son is so important, giving heat and light, which are necessary for the sustenance of the living beings and without them the living beings would be in darkness and cold without that, you know, energy of the sun. I can't say that they wouldn't be able to exist because living beings are spiritual and eternal, so they'll always exist. And of course there are living beings who exist in, you know, have different kinds of bodies. For example, Prabhupada said that on the sun itself living beings have fiery bodies. And even on this planet, I mean, there are living entities who exist, say, deep inside the earth. So they're generally not, well, dependent on the light of the sun, at least apparently. Of course, it must penetrate into the earth also, deep into the earth, have certain effects, and the heat from the sun must also go inside in some way. But still there are living entities that can, you know, exist in freezing cold or deep in the earth. They have particular types of bodies which can tolerate that. But still the sun's energy is, you know, is penetrating the earth and in sustaining the earth. So we are dependent. That's just one way in which we're dependent on sun, we're dependent on the air, we're dependent on water. Depend on the various aspects of the material nature of this body is at any rate. So therefore in Vedic culture it is traditional to show respect to all of those demigods who are, you know, managing those different aspects of universal creation. And just as Vayu, you know, he's the demigod controlling the air and the wind, or Varuna controls the water, the oceans, the rivers. Indra is supplying rainfall. But among all of them, of course, the sun is especially powerful and especially important. But they're all representatives of the Supreme Personality of God. Devotees are representatives of the Lord, and the demigods are devotees. So they act as his agents for managing the material creation, one of his creations. But still Surya in particular, you know, is considered to be Narayan, Surya Narayan. And he is singled out for special respect and special worship. We chant the Gayatri 3 times a day, as mentioned here. And the first Gayatri mantra is a meditation on the sun god. But for the Vaishnava, it's a meditation on Lord Vishnu, Lord Narayan, in the form of the sun. So we always have to be mindful of our superiors and our dependence on them. In modern trend is to reject higher authorities and to think oneself to be independent and can behave whatever way one likes. I had noticed an article when I was flying down here in the paper about how young men nowadays are very boisterous and unruly, disrespectful. I had experienced myself yesterday. I was walking in the botanical gardens, and some, you know, I guess it must have been around the break time for the school. You know, some young men were there, you know, must have been 15, 16, 17 year old schoolboys, but you know, a bit grown up, but you know, they were shouting, you know, rude remarks. You could see the mentality, you know. They say it's become more and more difficult for the teachers in the schools to cope with the young people nowadays because of this mentality of disrespecting their seniors, that the teachers become subjected to all kinds of abuse, and not an easy job because obviously young people have a lot of energy. If it's not controlled and channeled in a disciplined way, then you know it can become very destructive for them and for others. But this is Kali Yuga, this is the nature of Kali Yuga. Things are getting more and more wild and out of control. So many problems in human society due to rejecting the culture and traditions which have been passed down through the ages. Tradition, the culture, they have their sources in the instructions of the Supreme Lord and the great sages, not only in Vedic culture but in other cultures also. There's a long tradition of God consciousness. For example, in Europe, if you travel in Europe, there are so many beautiful churches and cathedrals, most of which took decades to build, and sometimes even hundreds of years to build. Generally, any town, any village, the central, most magnificent building is the church. And the music also was God-centered. You know, if we listen to the classical music like Bach or Beethoven, you know, generally they were on religious themes. Bach was a church organist, you know. So the paintings also. If you look at the paintings of, I guess, Michelangelo and other contemporaries, they're, you know, they're on religious themes, many of them. So the tradition is there in European society and Vedic society, of course, but and Islamic society and Buddhist society also, they have their traditions. And Buddhist society, you know, the tradition is young men become monks. Most of the men become monks at some stage or other in their life. Some maybe only a month or 2 or 3 months. Some for a few years, like that. So in this way, there's some, you know, tradition of teaching God consciousness and sense control, self-control, self-discipline, respect for others, this is important for peaceful life in human society. If not, then if these traditions are disrespected and thrown out, then human society becomes animalistic. Animals don't have religion or culture or, you know, sadhus. Of course, maybe there are some. The older animals might be respected by the, maybe. But in general, that, you know, it is just a very rough and tumble existence in animal society. Survival of the fittest, aggressive behavior. You see the dogs barking in the street, you know, sometimes arguing with one another, isn't it? Sometimes a big, like in India, sometimes you'll see a big gathering of dogs barking and howling and fighting with one another. So Prabhupada was quite correct in remarking, you know, that the society has become animalistic, become a society of dogs and cats, polished animals. They may have wealth, they may have, you know, fast cars and aeroplanes and so forth, but the mentality is very doggish, very low class. So it's important, if one wants to progress in spiritual life, to break free from that animalistic mentality, to accept some training and discipline. Disciple, the word disciple, of course, it comes from discipline. That we need discipline so we can learn how to control the mind and senses and channel our energy in the service of Krishna. One who channels his energy in the service of Krishna gets access to the association of the Lord. Krishna reciprocates with such a person and reveals himself to such a person in varieties of ways, so as to inspire the person, to inspire the devotee to serve further. There's a reciprocal exchange between Krishna and his devotee. And the Prabhupada said, the devotee serves Krishna enthusiastically. Krishna appreciates and reciprocates, which makes the devotee even more enthusiastic. And Krishna reciprocates further. So in this way, the you know, loving dealings between Krishna and his devotees are ever fresh and ever expanding. But this is a, you know, it's quite specialized, we could say, considering the condition of most people in the material world in Kali Yuga. In such a yoga, it might not have been so specialized or so rare that, you know, a person would be serving Krishna. Most people would be in the mood of serving the Lord. But nowadays in Kali Yuga, it is becoming rarer and rarer. Samahatma Sudurlabha. Such great souls are very rare. Who actually understand the science of Krishna consciousness and apply it in their lives. So we're very fortunate that Srila Prabhupada, being such a elevated Vaishnava, devotee of the Lord, took it upon himself to come to the Western world, to come here to Australia on how many? 5 occasions? Prabhupada came to Australia. Something like that, isn't it? 4 or 5, I think 5 occasions. And 3 times to New Zealand, I heard. Something like that. And these are not the most populated countries of the world, you know. Sometimes you think Australia. Now it has maybe, what, 25, 26 million people, but probably in Prabhupada's time it was half that. 11, 12 million, 13 million, something like that, back then. So, you know, by comparison with European countries, although the land area of Australia is very large, most of it is arid desert, isn't it? So, you're laughing. Land area of Russia is also very large, but most of it is uninhabited. Siberia, even much larger than Australia. By comparison with USA or European countries, even then, Prabhupada's time, France, Germany, England, 50 million each or more. Italy, all heavily populated countries, so a lot of conditioned souls there. To whom one could preach. But Prabhupada, he wanted to preach everywhere. He wanted to preach in Africa also. In Africa, he very much wanted the local people to take to Krishna consciousness. I was noticing some email exchange about the temple opening in Nairobi. One of our sannyasis is always saying that, there's too much concentration on the Indian population, not enough preaching to the African people. Prabhupada himself, he very much wanted the preaching to the African people. So he wanted all kinds of people. I remember even when we were going to Bangladesh, Prabhupada was telling us to preach to the Muslims also. He said they're not like other Muslims. He said they're gentlemen. Not so easy to preach to Muslims. And I can't say that we've made any inroads. And it can be dangerous also. Malaysia also. And most of our preaching is to Indian community or some to Chinese community. But if you convert a Muslim, would be dangerous. You can be put in prison. They can be put in prison also for converting out of Islam. But still, Prabhupada had that compassion and desire to elevate everyone to the spiritual platform. Because if we remain on the material platform, on the platform of sense enjoyment and mental speculation, gross or subtle material platform, we'll suffer. It may appear that some people are wealthy and fortunate, but generally these wealthy persons, they are also suffering. What was that singer recently? Michael Jackson, huh? Was it about a year ago or so? He overdosed on some kind of and it's whatever, trying to numb the suffering. His doctor was blamed anyway. When the doctor, he's also doctor was just an accomplice. He himself, despite his fame, he was obviously struggling and suffering in the material world. I think he had many types of, plastic surgery. Isn't it? It's a big business, this, of plastic surgery. People trying to keep looking young and keep enjoying the senses. But it's a futile attempt, of course. There was a, what is that lady? She was the heiress of Woolworths, Barbara Hutton, I think was her name. She was married 7 times and never found happiness. So, this is just a gloss, people may have wealth and some prestige, fame, but it's just a thin veneer inside that. Living beings in the material world are struggling and suffering. So Prabhupada, he could see that very clearly, and he had deep compassion. Why do devotees, great devotees like Prahlad Maharaj or Srila Prabhupada, why do they have so much compassion? It's because they're so perfectly situated in Krishna consciousness, and as a result of that are feeling so much transcendental ecstasy and happiness and satisfaction. And despite whatever, you know, external conditions may be there, they are always in blissful Krishna consciousness. So in that sense, they are the real wealthy persons, having the greatest treasure. And seeing others are poor, you know, just as we are singing here, the friend of the poor. The friend of the poor. What does it mean, the friend of the poor, huh? Adama Janara Bandhu. The poor and the fallen, the friend of the poor and the fallen. The poor, it means they're not necessarily materially poor, but they're poor in spiritual life. They have no spiritual riches. But the Vaishnavas, they have vast spiritual riches. And they're not greedy. Huh? Vaishnavas live very simply. Even there, you know, we see Prabhupada was a leader of so many devotees. Devotees were always offering him so many things. But he lived simply. He used that, whatever came in the service of Krishna, to further spread Krishna consciousness. And Krishna gave him more. Krishna was reciprocating. Previously, when he was in India, he was poor for some period after, you know, he had retired from household life and he was living in Vrindavan and Delhi. He was poor, but he was unperturbed. He went on with his service. So poor or rich, he lived simply. He was always in blissful Krishna consciousness. And he was always thinking how to give that gift to others. This is the mood of the Vaishnavas. Prahlad Maharaj, when Lord Nrisimhadeva asked him what benediction you would like, he said, I don't need any benediction. I'm already, you know, perfectly situated as your servant. But, you know, then he did ask, you know, please forgive my father for his offenses. So he was, you know, despite the fact that his father had tried to harm him in so many ways, treated him so badly. You see, Prahlad Maharaj, he didn't bear any resentment, or he wasn't thinking of revenge, or, you know, he didn't think, you know, just let me forget about this personality altogether. Rather, he was thinking, you know, how he can be freed from his wrong mentality, from his demonic mentality. How he can get that gift that I have, that gift of Krishna consciousness. So this is the mentality of the great Vaishnavas. They're always absorbed in the bliss of Krishna consciousness and always looking for ways to distribute that gift to others. They want to see everyone happy in Krishna consciousness. So we take shelter of such personalities and we should try to assist them. We are the servant of the servant of the servants of Krishna. If we understand our position and remain fixed in that position, that is perfection of life. So even though it's Kali Yuga, still the Lord has appeared personally, both at just prior to the beginning of Kali Yuga and again as Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu more recently. And Mahaprabhu's mood, of course, was the same, to distribute that gift of Krishna consciousness far and wide, even to the most fallen, even to dacoits and gangsters like Jagai and Madai. Lord Chaitanya, Lord Nityananda, they delivered even the most fallen personalities. So in this way, it's a great fortune, and of course that gift of Krishna consciousness includes so much tradition and culture and respect for the seniors is very much part of that culture. So if we cultivate that mood, that will help us to be situated nicely in Krishna consciousness and to control our senses and to access the vast realm of spiritual existence. So therefore, important to observe these traditions. They create a framework for spiritual practice. Varnashram Dharma is not the most important thing, but it is supportive of the practice of Krishna consciousness. That's why we also observe the standards of, at least to some extent, of Varna and Ashram. But the focus is always on service to Krishna. And that is said in the Bhagavatam, that the goal of all of Varnas and Ashram is to please the Lord Hari, Samsidir Hari Toshana. So that should be our meditation. And the first and foremost way to please the Lord is to constantly chant His holy name. You must put aside every day sufficient time to attentively hear and chant the holy name of Krishna, both in kirtan and in japa. That is a way of associating with Krishna in Kali Yuga. Always keeping oneself as the humble servant of the Guru and the Vaishnavas. One should chant the holy name of the Lord constantly. That is what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu stressed. Trinadapi sunichena tarorapi sahishnuna amanina manadena kirtaniya sadahari. One should chant the holy name of the Lord in a humble state of mind, thinking oneself lower than the straw in the street. One should be more tolerant than a tree, devoid of all sense of false prestige, and should be ready to offer all respects to others. In such a state of mind, one can chant the holy name of the Lord constantly. So Krishna Das Kaviraj says that one should string this verse on the thread of the holy name and wear it around his neck. So this is a vital instruction for the Vaishnavas. It's like the motto of the Vaishnavas. We see these this verse often inscribed on the, you know, wall of the important Vaishnava temples. It's a very essence of Krishna consciousness to constantly chant the holy name in a proper mentality. So we must put aside time to try to chant attentively and relish the transcendental sound vibration of Lord Krishna's holy name. In this way you'll get spiritual strength, and also through the association of the Vaishnava serious devotees we can get enthusiasm and strength and determination to practice and to preach Krishna consciousness as Srila Prabhupada exemplified in his life. And as he often said, just do as I am doing. So we just follow in the footsteps of Srila Prabhupada and the previous acharyas. In this way we can, even though it's Kali Yuga, very troubled time, we can be fixed in Krishna consciousness and progress to the ultimate goal of life, which is to develop ecstatic love of Krishna. And if Krishna invites, we may also go back to the spiritual world. So, any question or comment here? Yes. Well, we should then just, you know, see ourselves as the assistant of the senior Vaishnavas or spiritual master of Prabhupada, and gradually we can develop that. It's a gradual process. I remember Prabhupada telling us, whether you speak about Krishna or you distribute a book about Krishna, it's the same thing. He said, that's the guru's business. So, you know, the guru may be speaking Krishna conscious philosophy, even if we're not, you know, so able to do that. We can assist, you know, by distributing books or by engaging in some service to support the preaching mission of Lord Chaitanya. And the more we do it, you know, the more we can become fixed and advanced in Krishna consciousness. We should try to associate with senior devotees, read Prabhupada's books, and, you know, follow good sadhana and keep busy in devotional service. Then, you know, we'll progress in Krishna consciousness. We'll become more and more peaceful and satisfied in devotional service if we practice nicely. Yeah.
Prabhupada being in that mood, and yet one time he said, when they left him in the line of the Mataji, he went crooked and I'm happy to do this journey, leave me here.
I didn't understand it.
They left him alone with the Mataji, and he said, you don't ever do that to me again, you know, I'm not the Prabhupada, you know. And he said, it doesn't matter, you don't put yourself in that position, you don't put me in that position again. So, because he was worried about falling down by being put in that position, he was Prabhupada at that stage. So,
Well, I can't say that he was worried about being falling down. Prabhupada set an example as a sannyasi. Yeah. But still, I mean, I did have experience once in the manor where Prabhupada in his room, he said, I'm always praying to Krishna that I won't fall down. So, you know, we might think, how could Prabhupada fall down? I mean, why would he be thinking like that? But because he was humble Vaishnava, you know, he wasn't overconfident that Maya can't harm me, Maya can't touch me. So I won't say that he was always worried like that, but, you know, he did feel that, you know, we need Krishna's protection in all circumstances, so. That's his humility. But we see Lord Chaitanya also, you know, he also didn't want to be left alone with the woman. There was an instance when he heard some lady singing very beautifully, and he just went into ecstasy. You know, it was she was singing about Krishna. So
he began running, but you know, his servant Govinda restrained him, and he said, "You know, you have saved my life," because he followed the standards of sannyas very strictly, so that to set an example for others. There's no question of Krishna, of Lord Chaitanya falling down. Even you have some argument with some non-devotee, I mean, it's disturbing to the mind.
So if I yes, so that our offense is not increased, that's my point. My question is, when we are doing Gayatri Mantra, supposing we can't put to the schedule, like early morning, 6 o'clock, 12 o'clock, 6, so what happens? Is it offensive? We can't do it, say, if we are in meeting or traveling or something.
Well, approximately, you know.
Approximately.
Yeah. Okay, thank you. Gramtaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki. Srila Prabhupada ki. Samaveta Bhaktivrinda ki. Gaura Premanandi.